Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
911, what's your emergency?
I got Pac Romaine here. He's got a gun to his head. His career is going off the rails. He's going to end it all if he can't get booked on a show soon or get a writing staff job or a podcast at his company.
All right. Who is speaking right now? Who am I speaking to?
You know who it is, damn it. This is Pac Romaine, 2012 champion of comedy, according to the SF Weekly.
So you're holding a gun to your own head?
Yes.
Yeah, we don't handle career emergencies.
What about podcast intros?
Hey, I'm Paco Romaine.
Hey, I'm George Chen, the Al Cowling of Paco's OJ, driving this Bronco of a podcast till it runs out of gas.
And today we'll be talking in depth about Ezra Edelman's ESPN 30 for 30 doc, OJ Made in America.
It's an epic 5-part documentary series chronicling the life and crimes of OJ Simpson. It's an in-depth examination of OJ as a product and victim of America.
Yeah, we sat down to discuss the series with comedian actor Greg Edwards of the web series Thug Notes.
But before we get to Greg Edwards, we wanted to hear from someone who's been in close quarters with OJ himself.
We talked with Harmon Leon, a storyteller, author, infiltrator who worked on Juiced, OJ's poorly conceived 2006 hidden camera prank show. We called Harmon in New York to get his side of the story. We've got Harmon Leon on the phone, who's joining the Sup Doc podcast. I've known Harmon from San Francisco. He's a comedian. He's a writer, infiltrator, writer of Harmon Chronicles, and so much more. Thanks for joining us, Harmon.
Thanks, Sam. But I actually live in New York.
Now you do.
San Francisco.
Now you're a Brooklynite. Is that correct?
Yep, in the 11211.
Oh, nice. So we wanted to talk to you because you were part of the Juiced show with O.J. Simpson, correct?
Not only part of it, I co-starred and spent 2 weeks with O.J. Simpson in between when he was charged for a double murder until he went to prison where he currently is.
Okay, wait, so that the shooting... When the Juiced was shooting, that was 2006, right?
Yeah.
And that's when the when was the you were with him when the last criminal the kidnapping charges?
Well, this was like in between, like it was kind of in that period where OJ was, you know, playing his get out of jail free card and kind of just completely going nuts in a way. And this was a comeback project from him that was produced by the guy in Hollywood who also produced such quality videos as Bum Fights and Backyard Wrestling.
Right. Oh,
quality programming.
Yeah, the good stuff.
Yeah, that is the good stuff. I forgot about Bum Fights.
So you
so basically, I just answered an ad off of Craigslist. It's for a hidden camera prank show. And they didn't tell me, like, who the co-star was going to be. And my bar was, like, set so low, you know. They said, okay, when we tell you who's going to co-star in this, you're not going to believe it. You're just, like, not going to believe it. And, you know, I'm kind of jaded. I thought, you know, oh, it's going to be, like, you know, Vanilla Ice or, like, the other Hilton sister. And then I finally got hired, and they said, okay, we can tell you who the star of the show is. It's going to be O.J. Simpson.
Oh man! What did you think when you saw that? What was your first reaction?
I think my first reaction—I think the first words out of my mouth were, "Oh my god!"
That's incredible. And you obviously followed the trial. I mean, you were around in '94, so you followed the trial, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, everyone knows. You know, it's the most infamous, you know, double murder trial in history.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious, did it ever come up when you were filming with OJ?
Well, so I was living in San Francisco at the time, and I drove down to L.A., and the first thing that the producer says to me when I show up in the production office, he just wanted to clarify. He said to me, this is like his very first words to me, and my very first time meeting the producer, he said, you know, Harmon, I just have to make this perfectly clear. We really can't mention the murders. Okay. So this is like my first conversation with the producer. So he just wanted to lay some ground rules for the hidden camera pranks to follow that, you know, no matter what happens, it just would be in poor taste if somehow we brought up the murders.
Yeah, that would be in poor taste, right? That would be the only thing that was in poor taste. Now, so you just were like answered like an LA casting call or something?
Yeah. So it's just like a casting call on Craigslist, you know? So it's just for a celebrity hidden camera prank show, and I've done some hidden camera prank stuff. So I sent them that, and then, yeah, I got hired, and they didn't tell me up until, you know, it was almost time to shoot, like, who the star was going to be.
Did you think about backing out? Did you ever think about backing out during that part time?
Did I think about, like, jumping out of it, or?
Yeah, backing out of it when you found out it was
him. No, absolutely not, because, like, before then, I was, like, doing tons of infiltration stuff, and I thought, oh, man, this is going to be the best story ever.
Right, yeah.
And I thought, all right, so what better way to infiltrate the lowest rung of reality TV than being there, like, right on the front lines with the most, you know, infamous celebrity of them all?
Well, it seems like you could just now, it's like, why don't you could do something with like Robert Durst? You could find some other, like,
Stephen Avery, if he was free.
Who's that other famous LA murderer, like, who's an actor? Robert Stack? Is that?
Robert Blake?
Yeah. No, Robert Stack didn't
just
kill
him. It's kind of like, you know, once you do a hidden camera prank show with O.J. Simpson, and you will kind of want to go down that direction of, like, working on hidden camera pranks with other infamous people, you know, your bar is pretty high to that, you know, a Robert Blake would just be disappointing.
Yeah.
Be like, popping out, I'm Robert Blake, I have a gun, and be like, oh, man, I've worked with the granddaddy of this.
Right. What would Robert...
as they all, so it's just like, this is like, you know, been there, done that.
Would that show be called Shooting Blake?
Oh, yeah, Shooting Blake. Yeah, big show.
That's...
throw the body in the Blake?
Yeah.
Now...
I saw the O.J. Simpson Made in America documentary. You can actually see me on screen for a good, like, 2 to 3 seconds. In a scene where O.J. comes out of an elevator dressed in an Elvis Presley jumpsuit, and I'm, like, standing directly behind him coming out of the elevator for one of our, quote-unquote, hilarious pranks.
Now, did you ever get a DVD copy, the final copy of the Juiced show?
Yeah. So I got a copy, like, a long time ago, and I even made, like, a short documentary about my time, you know, being on Juiced. So, and then I do live shows, and that was, like, you know, part of one of my live shows, telling the tale of being on Juice. So within that, the live show, I use, like, little snippets from Juice to help, you know,
right,
tell the tale in its full horror.
What was one of your favorite segments from Juice? Do you remember? Any one you can share with us?
This is the one that people talk about. So it was like O.J. Simpson posing as a used car salesman trying to steer people to buy a white Ford Bronco. Within that, he ad-libbed and said had great escapability. You know, like he had a, you know, sense of humor about that thing that happened, you know, the incident.
The incident, right. He refers to it as the incident.
Yeah.
But then, okay, so I know you also wrote about this for Vice, and you were on This American Life, on the Too Soon episode, appropriately enough, talking about this also. And did you say that he made jokes about it? Like, he himself was making jokes. You weren't allowed to bring it up, but he brought it up.
Yeah, exactly. So once, like, O.J. kind of got in the rhythm of things, you know, and kind of loosened up a little bit, you know, he was the one that just started, like, you know, just dropping details about, you know, the murder trial and the white Ford Bronco case. And then, you know, occasionally he would slip and talk about, like, Nicole. Like, he was in... Like this one, it was just like creepy. Like one time he was dressed as this old white man, and we put him in like a bingo hall, and he was like the bingo caller. There was actually, you know, no gag really involved. It's just like, oh look, it's OJ, and he's dressed like this. But then he was like, afterwards, he was like, oh man, I can't wait to go dress like this and show my wife.
Yeah.
My girlfriend.
Oh.
Just like little creepy stuff like that.
That is super creepy.
Yeah, the one time I just felt the most uncomfortable was when OJ was getting that makeup applied, and he would just sit there while the makeup was being applied and watch like court TV, and it was during the Scott Peterson case.
Oh wow.
Yeah, the other famous guy who murdered his wife.
Yeah.
And I'm like hoping like, court TV, please don't mention OJ. Please don't mention OJ while OJ is watching this. Like, cause I didn't know like how he would react to it.
Yeah. It would be hard to gauge. Like, I mean, we've all sat in a room uncomfortably with somebody while they're like getting in trouble. Like, that is the worst case scenario.
Yeah, OJ would like talk to the TV like the TV was a person. You know, he's like, how are they going to work me into this? You know, he wanted them to, like, mention him. That was, like, the weird part. He's just, like, some guy, you know, sociopath that just, you know, craves attention. And he's like, oh, during my murder case, you know, my lawyers watched my back.
Right.
You know, just creepy stuff like that. And you're just in this small motel room. And OJ, you look over and he has makeup to make him look like an old white man, which looked like he was a severe burn victim.
Yeah,
right.
What was that juiced episode about? Because in the documentary they show him getting the latex on and all that stuff, but they don't really show what was the segment.
It's like a bingo caller.
Yeah. So we were in the valley in LA, and we went to this like bingo hall, and it was like all old, like a VFW hall, I think it was, and. Mm-hmm. They said, we have a guest bingo caller, and they would bring him on, and he's like the worst bingo caller in the world.
You feel like he doesn't have...
They didn't, it would have been funny if they would have disclosed, it's actually O.J. Simpson, but they just had him do it and then leave. They didn't tell anyone that it was O.J. Simpson.
Yeah, that's the big reveal.
Yeah, there was no reveal. It's just like, all right. He did that.
So everyone in the documentary talks about how charming he is and like how funny and charming he is. He doesn't seem to have any comedic ability on this prank show, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just like crazy. Like, I was only like hired to be there for a week, and then they hired me for 2 weeks because it was clear that OJ didn't have the Second City, you know, gift of improv.
Right.
So all the jokes are based on like something would happen and OJ Simpson would pop out.
Yeah.
You know, so all the gags were based on that. Like it would be like, oh, we're interviewing for a new roommate and meet your other roommate, it's OJ. Or
right.
Someone would be saying to her mom, you gotta meet my new boyfriend and it's OJ. But he would just come in and just be like, oh, hi, hey, nice to meet you. Hi, where are you from?
Wow.
They just like thought the premise of just OJ popping out and doing something.
That's incredible.
Enough of a prank, but he's just like, you know, he was just like, oh, hey, where you from? Hi, oh, that's good.
So for you, as a guy who, you know, has made a career on doing, like, infiltration and getting, like, this is sounds like one of the perfect gigs that just kind of fell into your lap. That's incredible.
Yeah, I guess, you know, if someone had to do it, I think I was just, like, the perfect person to do it because I was always there with the intent of, like, as soon as this is over, I'm going to break this up.
Yeah.
And, you know, otherwise it would just been, like, buried and, you know, really people just wouldn't know that this, like, just how horrible of a person beyond the murders that O.J. Simpson is, that, you know, he had, like, this get-out-of-jail-free card, and then, you know, there's no reason for him to do a zany hitting-camera prank show that, you know, pokes fun at his murder trial.
Right. Well, Harmon, thanks so much. I know you got to go. Thanks so much for joining us on SupDoc. And if you want to plug something or your Twitter or whatever, please do, where people can find you.
Yeah, quick plug. So in New York, on July 15th and 16th, I'm producing a storytelling festival at the People's Improv Theater. So I'm putting on the best storytelling shows in New York. And then I'll be doing my solo show the 28th through the 30th at East Edinburgh Theater Festival in New York. It's my solo show, Herman Leon's Big Fat Racist Show, and then August I'll be at the Edinburgh Festival. So
that's great. Thanks so much, Herman. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thanks a lot. Good talking to you guys.
Hey, this is Paco.
And this is George. And we're letting you know that this show is now on Patreon. It's a crowdfunding platform for monthly projects. And you can start as low as $1 a month to support this very show.
$1 a month. And you know what? That dollar helps us pay for equipment, web hosting, festival submissions, and bringing you more of the content you deserve.
Yeah, we do this with our producer, Will Scoville. We bring you our show every other week. And none of us expect to make any money, but it helps to keep this sustainable by contributing. And we've got rewards like Paco's album, Shaped Like a Thumb. You can get a download code for that.
And you can get to choose a doc for us to talk about, get a shout out on the show, and get George's Netflix password.
Yeah, I'm not revealing that until you pony up some Patreon for that. So find us on Patreon at patreon.com/supdocpodcast. And thank you for listening.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Simpson rushed for 1,709 yards in 1968, more than any other back in history. His durability is almost as legendary as his speed and moves. Simpson scored 22 touchdowns. He carried a record 355 times and proved himself nearly indestructible.
All right, so we're joined by comedian, actor, good guy, talented man, nice, Mr. Greg Edwards.
Thanks, Paco. Yeah. Oh, thanks for having me on, man. I love you guys, and I love talking about this subject. Ooh, makes my teeth white. I like it.
No need to brush after watching this documentary.
At all. I don't need apples. Yeah. I don't need anything. This is great.
I was going to offer you some apples, but we don't. We have peaches, and that's it.
Yeah. So you... If I may ask, how old were you in 94 when this, were you?
I was 14 years old in 94.
Okay, so you.
In high school.
Yeah, you're in high school when this happened.
It was crazy. I really didn't like, I didn't focus on the trial. I just knew it was on all the time. And I thought we were like, because I was like an artsy kid. I was like, this is weird. I was like, this is something that's going to change everything. This is the way they were showing it on TV and how people were addicted to just the trial. And I don't remember, I think Real World come out in 96?
I think 90 or 91 is when
it was.
World
earlier,
World
yeah.
Out.
Yeah,
90.
I felt like, because me and my friends loved Real World, the first New York one, and then they did the San Francisco one, and I thought this was like the best thing in the world, just like TV following you around and just taping everything. But then I watched this, and I was like, this is Real World too. But weird. This is weird Real World. So I was fascinated. I thought it was crazy.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Virginia. I grew up in Newport News, Virginia. I grew up in the same town as Michael Vick and Allen Iverson, if that puts anything on where I grew up at. But yeah, it's a very military town, super middle class, black, white, some Koreans. But it's... Puerto Ricans and Filipinos because of the military influx and stuff. Yeah.
Did you notice, like, among different demographics, how people reacted to the story differently?
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was, like, two things I noticed in high school. The OJ trial, how people reacted to it. And I was like, it's weird. Like, the race lines, I just didn't, like, because I, what did I think? I thought he did it, but I also didn't care. I was like, it's just like two white people died. I was like, people die every day. What am I caring about these two rich white people dying? You know what I'm saying? So I really didn't care. And I was like, at the trial, like, I was thinking about the riots that really affected me differently because my teachers were hugging me a lot during the riots. And I was like, people are getting killed all the time. So I really didn't care about the trial.
So you were like 13 when people were hugging you for the riots.
I was 13 and I was in middle school. And I remember I had like an English teacher. I walk in the day of the riots and she gives me this deep hug. Miss Wright, little short black lady, loved me that I was on a swim team. She was like, keep on swimming, you know. But yeah, it was weird. So seeing that and then seeing how people reacted because OJ got off, like he was giving us money or like he cared about us, you know.
Yeah,
it was just very weird.
You couldn't be further removed from Los Angeles. You're on the other side of the country,
other side of the world.
You were 14 years old,
exactly,
swimming, trying to get dates.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out your place in the world.
Just trying to figure me out, yeah.
But did your parents have, because they would be of the, closer to the age, right, of this, of OJ and Nicole. Yeah. Did they have an opinion about?
You know, like, my parents are just working class folks. Like, my mom's a nurse. My dad's a mailman. So they didn't really talk about it. My dad was just like, ah, man, you know, this is just some race stuff. This just the same thing that happens all the time. OJ's black. They're going to say he did it. Even if he did do it, or even if he didn't do it, they're going to say he did it. So whatever. And just move along. Don't even, he would just, you know, he would say stuff like, don't even focus on this stuff. Don't even think about this. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous. Has nothing to do with you. Mm. Everybody's rich.
Right.
Move
right.
along.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. We're hustling. We got to go to work.
Yeah, yeah. You know? So in his mind, it was more class than race.
Totally. Well, it was race too, but like in his mind, race and class are always together. Gotcha. Anyway.
Doesn't well, that's matter. A fair point. I yeah. mean, it is.
It is, right? It's like yeah. race, class, it's same shit.
Yeah.
Same plot.
Right. They're the same, two different cars on the same highway, mm-hmm. right? That's so I do want, for people who are listening, I want to talk about yourself. So you have a show, mm-hmm. a YouTube show.
Yeah, YouTube.
Called Thug Notes.
Thug Notes,
which is
fun.
Extremely
yeah.
funny.
Yeah,
and informative.
It is.
So can you tell us a little bit about Thug Notes?
Thug Notes is basically a show where I play a thug. My name is Sparky Sweets, PhD. He's a very, very smart thug character. It's basically me. It's basically me just with an exaggerated voice, and they couldn't call it Greg with his funny voice talk about books, so we had to call it like Thug Notes right. or something. But it's dope. We do a summary and analysis on Western classical literature,
yeah.
anything from like Huck Finn to 1984 yeah. to Jane Eyre. Yeah, so many books. We've done like over 100 books.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. And it's great. I mean, like if anybody wants to know anything about like a book we've done, you're good. You don't need yeah. to read. Well, we hope that you want to read it, but it's really no need. We break it down so cleverly and give yeah. you all the insides of it. And it's great. Kids love it. Teachers love it. It's helped me in comedy yeah. a lot. It's gotten me booked in other things. Yeah. And yeah, it's been great.
It's kind of like Cliff Notes
yeah,
is the idea.
Thug yeah. Notes, Cliff Notes.
Right, right.
Sparky Sweet, Spark, you know, the Sparks. Yeah.
What's the most popular episode?
Well, I think like To Kill a Mockingbird is like the one we've gotten like over like a couple of, we got like 1.5 million hits. I think that's the biggest one. Lord of the Rings.
I
think Lord that's a big one.
Did you do Lord of the Flies?
Yes.
Yeah, I think
yeah,
I
we
saw
did
that
do
one.
Lord
yeah,
of the
yeah.
Flies. Yeah, that was fun, too.
Are you going to do the sequel to Kill a Mockingbird? Ghost of the Watchmen?
I don't think. Did we do I think we did like a conversation on it. I don't uh-huh. think we did it. I've read like half of that book so far.
Yeah.
I like it, though. I like mm-hmm. that she flipped it on everybody. She's yeah. like, fuck this. Flip the table up. You thought Atticus was dope? Nah, motherfucker. I got
she had
you.
To do something.
She
right?
had to.
Yeah.
She was getting fucked with a lot. I like yeah. her story. Like her people were trying to come at her with money issues mm-hmm. and. Mm-hmm. They didn't want her to put the book out, and yeah, I just, yeah.
Yeah.
Narrators are dope. I love, like, just writers and authors, and they're awesome people. They're like graffiti artists, weirdos.
Have you done this character, like, live, or is it only web videos?
It's only web videos. It's hard to do it live, but I've been getting, like, some stuff. People are asking us to do it live, so mm-hmm. maybe I'll scratch that.
I can totally see that working. Yeah,
that's a lot of them. That's I used to be an actor, like yeah. deep theater actor in thespian days, and that's a lot of work. Yeah. But it'll be yeah. fun though. It could be fun.
You started more in the acting than the stand up. Yeah,
I did. That like, was
out of Virginia. Or
when I moved, I was doing community theater. I was doing like a mystery dinner theater in like Williamsburg where you have an act mm-hmm. and I'd like grab a dude's head and mm-hmm. give him a cupcake and you yeah. know at the end of it I'm the dude that's the killer and
yeah.
hey, good night. You remind me of Eddie Murphy. You sound like Chris Rock. You know that shit.
Yeah.
And then I moved out.
Then you moved to San Francisco because mm-hmm. I met you in San Francisco. Weren't you doing sketch comedy in San Francisco?
I was. I was doing, what was the name of that group? I was yeah. doing it with Sal yeah. and Tossing Alice.
Yeah, Tossing Alice.
Yeah, we're doing sketch and doing stand up and like those were the these are good days too, but those were super fun days.
There was a time in the mid 2000s in San Francisco when there was a real resurgence in sketch comedy.
Yeah.
Like sketch comedy really came back strong for a while.
Theater, and I think it was like on the cusp of like a lot of people doing like digital and video sketch yeah. comedy
mm-hmm. yeah.
with the influx of like theater stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Because I remember I performed with you guys at the Darkroom Theater. Mm-hmm. They had a sketch comedy.
R.I.P. the Darkroom.
Rest in peace.
Yeah. sketchy at best. I think it was called. It was like a sketch festival, and I remember seeing you guys.
Yeah, yeah. You guys, Lobster, Killing My Lobster, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, Killing My Lobster, I was in that, but I was in another group called Richter Scale that was in that with Sammy Wiegent and all those guys.
Sammy's doing good now, right? Sammy's like got a show. Like
Clueless. Speechless.
Yeah. Everything Sammy touches turns to gold. Like the guy understands. He's one of those rare beasts that can produce and perform. Yeah. So that is not something you find in the entertainment world.
Good. Always been good.
Oh yeah, Sammy's good people for sure. So I want to ask both George and Greg, what do you think Made in America means? Like, that's the thing, when I saw that title, I kept trying to do some research on why the director Ezra Edelman came up with Made in America, but I've never seen anyone explain it. So I'm just wondering why you guys think it's called OJ Made in America.
So the reason the case itself was so transcended all these things or just became the focal point is it's like five obsessions that America has, right? It's race, sex, sports, celebrity, and like money. It's like all those major topics that America's obsessed with. And then I think what he kind of gets to in the end after watching goddamn like 8 hours of this thing is like, Simpson ends up, it has to totally do with this hubris and his ego and him wanting to just reach back and get these like artifacts of a time in his life that seemed where he was on top of the world. Mm. And that drive of like the fame and the celebrity part, I think, and also like the fact that like even that something like the prank show could exist is just like a lot of people are like, yeah, he did it, but it's still entertaining. And the fact that this is a thing that's still a huge success 20 years later, it's like we just treat these things as entertainment. We are the reason there is a 8-hour documentary about this. Like, that's what I think the Made in America part is about. It's about the American obsession with these things.
I love the title Made in America because OJ is made here. What produced OJ is America. If people don't know, we've all been to San Francisco. We've all seen Potrero Hill.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? Potrero Hill is garbage. It's a ghetto in the middle of one of the most beautifulest cities in the world, right? Yeah, I mean, everybody, people come from all over to go to San Francisco, but they don't come to see Potrero Hill. And like one of my most favorite parts of this documentary was when OJ was talking about how he used to game people. Like, I would go to a baseball game and I'd get a ticket and I'd be like, come, come, please, let me have a ticket, let me ticket, cry, cry, cry. Then he'd run around the other side and hustle to sell that.
Yeah.
That is signs that this dude is intelligent, he's smart, he knows what he's doing, and he sees the game for what it is. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. Like, I've lived in San Francisco, and being black in San Francisco in the year, like, 2000s, like, it's hell now living in San Francisco being black. So just imagine in like the 70s and I'm thinking 50s,
60s. Yeah.
50s, he was 60s?
There, yeah.
Oh my God. It must have been horrible. Pimps and everything. Like as a kid seeing that. So he's trying to get out of there no matter what. So it made that killer. It made that conniving beast of a man that he is. It made him run over people. Like he had to get out. Mm-hmm. So I think, and just America, man. I mean, America is built on savagery, killing people, and making money off of people. And OJ figured out the game. He was like, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. So it made this person who he is. And then the fact that he had to, like, push away his blackness to keep going, that you're adding to a crazy person. If you're making this dude do this, he's just turning more crazier. Yeah.
Let me interject for a quick second. That's an interesting point. But I want to ask, do you think he had to push away his blackness or willingly pushed away his blackness?
I think he was caught up in a position that he was like, look, man, I'm the best football player in the game right now, and I'm not going to give up all this money for something that I know ain't going to work. Mm-hmm. I lived in San Francisco. You guys live in Kentucky.
Right.
Y'all in California. I know this pushing for racism and pushing against this ain't going to work. I'm trying to get my money, and I'm trying to take – he says this one part. He was like, it's OJ and my family. I'm trying to take care of me and mine.
Right.
And I hear that. As a black man, I'm like, I get that, dog. Like,
yeah.
Why am I going to give up all this? I mean, yo, I'm always about my race, but – if you're looking at it for real, we're not going to win this shit right now. We need to get our money. Yeah. We need to get this shit first, and then we can get together and do this. I hear what you're saying. We do need to talk, but let's talk behind doors, and let's get this money first. And I feel like OJ was like that. And I respect that. That's a hard position to be in, but I respect it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I would have did that, but I respect it.
And I kind of relate to that because there's this thing where, like, I feel like he's criticized for, like, not being one of the radicals in the 60s. He's in USC. It's a completely, like, white ivory tower situation. But, and he's given a lot of shit for this. And, but also this idea, he's like, I'm not black, I'm OJ. That is, on one side, it is like, yeah, you're selling out your people. But then I think we're at this point now, I think, like, the idea of progress for a lot of groups, like I think about this for like women, for gay people, for Asian people, for black people. It's almost like the thing now is like you're equal when you can be a big scumbag and be a minority, and you're more known for being a scumbag than being a minority. Does that make sense? Like it's like when you can transcend some of those things, I think that is significant somehow. Does that make sense to you?
Explain a little deeper. Yeah.
Like, if you can just be like, well, obviously not a murderer. Okay, we're not talking about murder, but you're saying like, if you can just be, if not everyone has to live up to like, you represent your race.
Yeah.
You don't represent women. You don't represent gay people. You're an individual. Like, there is something I think interesting about that, and that is also very American.
Yeah.
This idea that like you do just represent you. The difference is most of us aren't in a position of power and representation the way O.J. Simpson was, or the way Muhammad Ali was, or people like that. We're not in those positions of power. And I'm sure there's to this day, there's a lot of, actually it's really interesting around like Black Lives Matter, because the sports team, I forgot what football team was it, and
I guess it was in Missouri. Cleveland, someone,
yeah, and they came out with their hands up, and like they made sports political in that moment, and like a lot of people were upset about that there, but it's like fuck them, you know, like so it, like there are times where you step up and you do these things, you know, to for the greater good. But he had these opportunities and he didn't take them back then, so we're judging him based on that now. But I think like in some senses it's like having, If you aspire to like a colorblind society, which people, it's, that doesn't exist, right? So it's just as an aspiration, then you can think, oh, well, you know, him being totally sociopathic and selfish and not backing up black people in the 60s or even until he needed them.
Until
that's
needed
the
them.
Part, well, that's really the annoying part.
Well,
this.
I think he got, it's, I mean, he had to, he played a weird game, man, and he had to play it, and he figured it out. He's just, people forget that he's not a dumb jock. You know, he needed him at that time, but he really didn't need him at that time. He just needed to show people that, you know, I'm still with you guys because they don't want me. And that was him, because he's also like a, I think OJ is compassionate in a way too. His compassion is weird.
Okay.
But he, that was him basically saying, thank you.
Right.
Thank you for getting me out. Thank you. Look, these white people don't like me at all, but I know what you guys did for me. Thank you. And I'm kind of sorry for not being there for you guys when I needed to be there for you, but thank you. And that's his weird compassion that's in his brain.
Mm-hmm. And that's all in episode 5 they get into that, even though I think it's still manipulation.
Oh, totally.
Because he still wants that love and that public adulation.
Well, he got addicted to that love.
That's that's what I think got him in the end. That's the hubris in the end.
Totally.
Absolutely. Well, he has a desire to be special, which started from very young to probably right now.
Yeah.
Whatever, he's a janitor in prison, whatever he's doing, I'm sure he's still using
still
that.
Still a special janitor.
He's still the most special janitor.
Still OJ.
Yeah, he's still.
Everybody, if OJ got out right now, he'll make $1 million as soon as he gets out. He should be getting paid for all this shit. We're the sick people. America's fucking sick because we love this shit.
That's the thing
we get off and we jerk off on it, and it's ridiculous.
That's what I was trying to get at with the Made in America thing. It's like, this is... It's so, I mean, it's such a Shakespearean tragedy and comedy, you know, and like Americans love fall from graces. We love to put people up on a pedestal and then knock that pedestal down. And then when they're down, they'll either say, we told you so, or like, you're showing your race right now. Kind of like Michael Vick.
Totally.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, about my boy. Of course, man. The way he got crucified, and like maybe 3 years before that, it was a dude doing the same thing. Not as big as what Vick was, not on the same level, but he was fighting dogs. It was a white dude fighting dogs, played for the Chiefs.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but
but with him, they didn't say, now you're showing your whiteness. They wouldn't say that to a white guy. They'd just be like, you're just a criminal. But with Michael Vick, they're like, now you're showing your blackness because of you got caught doing something.
Well, you know, this country's full of this, you know, black and white people in this country have the worst marriage ever. It's the best.
Literally
the worst.
And figuratively.
It's a marriage. It's a marriage. I don't want you to leave. I want to leave. I don't want you to leave. I'm going to beat you up.
Right.
But I don't want you to leave. I want to stay, and I still want to be included in this whiteness and this white supremacy. But it's a crazy marriage that
it's
we
codependent.
Have. It's codependent, and it's never going to change.
Yeah. Speaking of which, this is an interesting side note, but I texted my mom this morning to see how my stepfather's passed away. He's African American. Mm-hmm. I wondered what he thought about this because I never got a chance to ask him about OJ. And she texted back and she said, "I thought he was innocent, but Gwen, my stepdad, thought he was guilty." Right? And I was like, "What the? Like, what is? How does that fall in line with anything?" It just goes to show, like, you just never
fucking know
about this stuff.
Never know. Yeah.
It's I don't know. So like, I thought, to get back to the doc, like, this doc is it's like a masterpiece.
It's beautiful.
It's so well done, right? And it shows everything. Like, what did you learn, Greg, from like the first two episodes before the trial about OJ?
I mean, those are my favorite episodes, the first two trials. I mean, I know the trial. I just saw a mini series of the trial. You know, like, I really want to know OJ. And those first two showed OJ, showed his friends, showed AC. Woo, AC.
Yeah.
Can I hang out with you, AC? I want to talk to you because you know what's up.
AC knows what's up.
AC knows everything. And his homie, the San Francisco homie, with the voice.
Joe Bell.
I didn't think
you're messing with the gods.
My favorite part, Greg, they show him 20 years earlier, and he's like, "I don't know." It's like he still has that same voice.
Yeah. I hope he gets some voiceover work out of this, too.
Yeah.
But those, like, I love those episodes and just showing, you know, OJ's like, "Oh, man, I want to be famous." OJ was like, "Your kid's going to be fighting over my jersey." You know, like, he knew he was going to be big.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I love the stuff about San Francisco Potrero because that really... Those are the ones that really hit me the most. Like, okay, I know this dude now. And I know San Francisco. San Francisco is a different city. It's a different zone. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of hustlers in San Francisco that hustle everything. So, OJ was a hustler,
man. Potrero Hill is weird because on one side, facing the city, it's beautiful, very expensive Victorians and apartments and stuff. And on the other side...
The side that faces Oakland.
The side that faces the ports and Oakland is... the destitute project side. Now, I play basketball at the Potrero Rec Center, the PRC, and if you go in, they have the entire walls are covered in photographs that are with plastic over them so you can't touch them. But there are pictures of OJ and when James Brown shot, you might remember this, Latrell Sprewell commercial. From like the early 90s when he was with Golden State.
All right. He was dancing.
So that was shot at that.
At the PRC?
At the PRC. The rec center? Yeah, at the rec center. So it's really cool. I mean, you can see all these old pictures of all these old basketball players and football players, and they have pictures still of OJ in there, which is really interesting.
They haven't taken them down yet?
Yeah, no, they have not taken them down.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah. Gives you certainly a history of like Potrero.
I mean, it's a big fame. I mean, it's a famous area. Who else? The guy that played for USF. The guy, one of the gods of Bill Russell.
Oh yeah, Bill
played
Russell.
Played USF. You know, it's a big sports town. You know, San Francisco, all those championship rings, and OJ just happened to be from there too.
So you liked episodes 1 and 2.
I loved episodes 1 and 2. Yeah, just getting the backstory and his wife. And like the stuff that how they talked to OJ back then, and just like, man, this dude had to deal with that. And look at his head. His head is so big, guy. He's huge, man.
He's a big guy.
I didn't know he was so handsome back then, too. He looked a lot like that when they showed him in Roots. He looked like Lenny Kravitz.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, he was super handsome.
He's a good looking dude.
Who is that guy that was like, oh, man, they talked to a lot of talking heads in this documentary. I mean, they talked to the one older guy who was like, he's so handsome, he had like white features. You remember that guy?
Oh, God, that was one of the Hertz guys.
He was one of the advertising
guys
for
Hertz.
He didn't even
seem black. Yeah. Like, he was so good looking. Like, what the fuck?
He had like white features. It's just like.
And I love that. I'm just like, look how racist. That's... Look how racist this country is still with the documentary. Like, and they can't even hide it, you know?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And they're talking about taking him to all the white golf courses.
And then Hearns do like, I took him to places. And he was trying to be like I'm such a good man. I took him to places Negroes couldn't even be seen in before. I'm such a great person. I'm like, you're the reason. Like, yeah, you're the reason all this is going on.
Right.
That racism that's deep inside that you can't even control, that's just seeping out of you. I love Ezra for not taking that out, too. I hope I imagine him as a person that saw that and was like, oh, I have to keep all this in because it just shows the racism that still exists that's going
on. What did he have? Like, he had like 200 hours of footage to edit down to whatever it was, 7 hours. I mean, that's incredible. Yeah.
He had a 10-hour cut is what I heard on Marin. He did an interview with Marin. I think he had a 10-hour cut and he got it down to this.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Think of the stuff he was like, that's way too racist to even put. I'm going to get sued if I put something like that in. Like, that's pretty incredible. I thought for episodes 1 and 2 and this, I mean, for me, I knew a lot of OJ's backstory. I knew about his football stuff. But one thing I didn't know was about his dad.
Oh, yeah. That part. The gay dad and the dude, like, did you know OJ's dad is a punk? He was like, you better not ever say that again, you know. And OJ just having to deal with that. And, I mean, you know.
Did you know about that?
I had no idea.
I did not know about that either. It's also Nicole brings it up later as maybe like, why does he beat me? Does it have anything to do with this?
Uh-huh.
And then, so his dad's around. I don't know when his dad passes away, but I mean, that makes sense that why he had a single mom.
Yeah.
Just split up for that reason,
right?
Among others. But he's in the graduation photo, I think, with his mom from USC. Mm-hmm. So,
I think he died in the early 90s of AIDS complications. But like that is, it's so, I just find it so. It's so interesting to me that that piece of that story has always just been like, it doesn't matter, you know, because maybe it's just being overshadowed by everything else in OJ's life. But it just seems like that would have been one part that we would have known for a long time. Yeah. But it was interesting to find that out.
For me, in the second episode, like a lot of the Nicole stuff I didn't know. Like she was so young when they met. She was only 18.
Yeah.
And then just all of the domestic abuse stuff.
First date,
was really
right?
Gnarly.
Ripped up jeans.
Yeah.
How do you rip up a girl's jeans? Like, I'm like, with your hands? What do you?
That's not easy.
Yeah, you know.
Ugh. I mean, so. I haven't tried, but like, I can't imagine denim tears too easily with that. He's got enormous hands too. Huge. There was one photo where they show him when he's super built. He has his shirt off. It's I think in the backyard of his house, and his hands are just enormous. You know,
big man.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then which kind of leads to the glove thing. Mm-hmm. But so in the later episodes, was there anything that you were surprised by that you found out? I mean, there's so much, obviously, but like. Something that just kind of stood out that you're like, oh, I didn't know that.
Well, I didn't know about all the Orlando stuff. Like, I didn't know he was hanging out with, like, gangster or, like, wannabe gangster dudes in Orlando. I didn't know he was, like, shooting rap videos. And
yeah.
I just didn't know that part of his life. I thought he was just on Orlando being, like, an old guy. But, no, he was partying and just, you know, still trying to be OJ. I didn't know that at all.
He's trying to be, like, a teenager almost. Like, he just completely regressed. I mean, that what is that, episode 4, I think that footage was in?
I think 5.
5?
Yeah, because after the trial, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, like, that was, I didn't know much about that, but I do remember Juiced because of Harmon Leon, and we were friends, and I remember when he was doing that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I don't remember... like the cocaine and the partying and all the fucking,
I remember one girl, like he had a girlfriend go missing or something at one point, and I thought like, OJ, what are you doing? Just leave, man. Just get out of here. Get out of this country, man. Come on, man. You got off. Go somewhere.
Well, at one point, they show him being interviewed, and the guy says that. Why don't you leave? He's like, what? Should I just go to Africa?
Yeah, dude. You know what I mean? I can tell you some dope cities to go in Africa. You'd be treated like a god.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can murder people over there. People don't care about Africans getting murdered. You can do what you do over there. Yeah. You know?
I do see that in 1994, you were arrested at the age of 46.
We're talking about this case?
No, the age at first arrest. How old were you the first time you were arrested for any reason?
I did about 46, yes.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Let's talk about the dream team.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, team, yeah. Come on. It's like the 92 Olympics NBA squad. Really, I mean, like, these guys.
Awesome dudes.
You really can't fuck with these guys. Mm-hmm. They had every position. You know, they had Cochran playing, I guess, point guard, right?
Of course,
Wouldn't Cochran be the point guard?
Point guard slash center.
Yeah, exactly. He kind of did both. He was guarding the rim.
Boom, get that out of here.
He calls him his quarterback, right?
Doesn't he? Is that what he said? Yeah, I guess OJ would use a football reference. That makes a lot more sense.
OJ seemed like he was in the game, too. He's like, put me in, coach. Let me get that glove on. I know what to do. He was ready.
Oh, that's but not testifying.
When he won?
Yeah.
And that one, he was just like, I mean, man, yeah.
That to it's me, like, I okay, talk about something I didn't know. Like, when they bring that part up about how OJ was, because I watched all of it, I was in college then, and I watched every morning. I would get up and it was court TV or CNN, and you could watch hours of the deliberations. I mean, it was on for hours,
forever, right?
Yeah, forever. Was, yeah. I would watch it every morning before I went to classes, or if I skipped classes, I'd just smoke a joint.
Hell yeah!
But
that must have been fun.
Yeah,
it was. How you watching that?
Oh yeah, and plus, like, I was really interested in law. I wanted to be a lawyer, so like, it was really. And F. Lee Bailey was one of my. I used to look up to. I didn't know Robert Shapiro. I didn't know Johnny Cochran. I didn't know obviously Chris Darden or Marsha Clark. But like, I knew F. Lee Bailey, but why? Watching that every morning, I didn't realize how involved OJ was. It's just something they never really showed. So that was interesting to me.
Yeah, it's probably. I mean, they probably didn't want to show OJ being involved, you know, because that would just make him look more guilty.
Yeah,
you
know? But so what's your feelings about the Dream Team? Like, was
I just, you know, I just think it's great that I think it's beautiful. I love just the beauty of everything that OJ had the money to afford this. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, you made this system. And I'm rich enough that I can get anybody I can buy to beat this system that you guys made. That I was playing in your game too. I was dancing with little white girls. y'all had me doing all this dumb shit.
Yeah.
And you put me with this because I killed my wife. Yeah, I killed her. I killed my wife and I killed a boyfriend. But now I can defend myself with the money that I gave from you watching me run. I think it's the beauty in it. It's the beauty of America that. Because, you know, people kill people all the time and people have money. What was the show on HBO?
Jinx.
Jinx. Yeah. This guy's killed so many people and had the money and got off, but nobody's like, we watched that show, but nobody's talking about it now. So OJ's like, yeah, I'm going to do the same thing these white dudes do because I'm in their club. I'm golfing with these guys. I'm going to do the same thing. And I just love it.
I think he was friends with Kardashian and I think Robert Shapiro. So, I mean, he was already in that elite
that
club.
Yeah.
Yeah, that circle where they're like, we know who we can get.
Well, I was thinking about how there was that moment where no one knew he was going to make a break for it, right? Like, Shapiro had some kind of plea bargain worked out.
Yeah.
He was going to turn himself in.
Yeah.
And that's when the car chase happened.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm sure, like, Shapiro's just like, what the fuck?
Of course he was.
That's, like, why he's just, like, he had to stay on the team, but at the end, he's just so ready to bail on them
done.
At the end.
Yeah, he hated it.
He's just like, this guy was supposed to do a plea bargain, like, months ago.
I remember watching that on TV. I remember watching Robert Shapiro give that speech where he was like, oops. He went out the back door. And then I remember watching Kardashian give his speech where he read the suicide.
I remember that as a kid. That was a suicide note.
Totally.
It's obviously basically a confession. OJ's so smart. He never goes past that line. It's always tiptoeing the out of bounds line, if you will, sports reference.
Boom, boom.
I didn't get it. It's fine. It went over my head completely.
When he needs 1 foot in, that's college. But like, it's like almost a confession, definitely a suicide letter. I remember watching that on television. Okay, so this leads us, there's so much to talk, because I love exactly what you're saying, that the money he got, which is, you're so smart about that.
Watch comparison. Me run, baby.
Yeah.
Y'all watch me run and paid me, so I'm using this to defend myself.
And the Frank, what's his, Olson from Hertz, like he got all that money from all these white people who are racist and saying that he's almost as beautiful as a white guy.
Exactly.
So he uses all that money to hire the best team to get him off from killing his white estranged wife. It's amazing. And then like Cochran, I mean, Johnny Cochran, did you see, so, oh, they obviously in the doc, they show the SNL sketch.
Oh yeah. With the kente cloth tie and shit. Loved it.
And the dashiki. Yeah. You know, if Cochran could have worn a dashiki to court, he would have worn one.
He could have brought an African band in. He could have brought Soul to Soul in, Arrested Development.
Yeah, right.
He could have. He would have did it. Yeah.
And the way, okay. And then poor Chris Darden.
Ah, he played him.
Oh God.
That Chris, look, it hurt Chris. He won't even do the documentary.
Yeah.
He won't talk. Where is he? Is he still in
LA?
That's
a good question.
Where is he? If I was Chris, I'd be in Hawaii somewhere. Yeah. I mean,
I think he's still practicing law. Oh, wait, maybe. No, actually, I think he quit practicing law.
Yeah.
I think he's on to other. I also didn't remember his lisp. That's so.
Oh, that's
he had
right.
A little lisp that he would. Mm-hmm. I don't quite remember. But then Cochran just played him.
Oh, he went to San Jose State. That's why.
Oh, Darden did?
That's not the reason. Oh, he's from Richmond, too. I didn't know
from Richmond, yeah.
Oh, that's right. Because
He's a legal commentator, or he was a legal commentator.
Right. I think he stopped doing law and went into, like, doing news show. But that's right. In the 10-part miniseries, they show him going back to
Richmond.
To Richmond
with Marsha and everything. Marcia, she's trying to fuck.
He couldn't. Everyone hates. I mean, he's so easy to kind of hate, but the glove part. So,
oh, he's a Republican.
Darden, really?
Oh, Darden.
Okay,
of course
well,
he is. At
this
hey,
Darden. Point. Damn, man.
But
lost
like
you
the,
too, huh?
The way. Yeah. The way Cochran played him, though, I mean, that is true black on black crime. Like that is like
love it, Pac. Love it.
That is like
it is though. It totally is.
The way he was like, we're gonna use the N word in court, and then Darden's like, you can't. But then he was like, but we're going to anyways. And he's like, okay, I'm gonna do it. But then it backfires on him. Like
everything
backfires.
But that's race in America too. Is like. Darden should have known from jump, like I'm just being used in the situation, and should
by
just,
the defense, by the prosecution,
by the prosecution.
Yeah.
I'm being used, and I should bow out. And by the greed of America, you know, by look, hey man, I got this opportunity. If they got me up here dancing, I can get this money, and you never know. But he didn't. He didn't. I think his dad even told him in the miniseries, I don't think you should do this, man. You should back out.
Yeah.
And he should have because he got played.
He did,
and it fucked up his life forever. Probably he wakes up every morning thinking about this. Masturbates thinking about it. He drinks his orange juice thinking about this, man. This dude, it's terrible. It's awful.
And the glove, like going with the, and when you watch on the doc and you watch him get up and start presenting the glove into evidence, and you know what he's going to do. And it's so, I kept going, no, like I was saying out loud to the television, like, nope, don't do it. It's going to backfire. And then talk us through it. Cause OJ, like you said, he's an actor.
Oh yeah.
Like, talk
Good
us
actor.
Through the glove.
Well, I feel like, and that's the sad thing too about Darden. Like first of all, they use you, and then they use you as a scapegoat of losing this whole thing. You know what I mean? Now you got punched in the face twice, and you don't have a job. But yeah, OJ, go ahead.
Oh, because Marsha kind of comes out like all right, or like in this doc, she comes out all right.
Yeah. Everybody else, I mean, books, and has Darden written a book?
Probably. Yeah. I'm sure he's probably written a book.
Yeah.
I would. It's probably called If the Glove Fits.
My bad.
If this Hulk fist fits.
He messed up. I just think he got used, and OJ just seized the moment.
Well,
man.
I think Cochran said to him, "You're not good enough." You know, and he would whisper shit to Darden.
Yeah.
And you're not ready. And Darden was like, "You know what? Fuck this. I've been pushed around for too long. Yeah. I know this. I know he's guilty, and I know this is going to work." And then it completely. And then they talk to the jurors, and all the jurors are like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah, they thought he was dumb. Well, the jurors are human beings too. They see you being played right now.
Yeah.
Why weren't you in the case in the beginning? Now they bring this black dude in.
Yeah.
Get out.
And then
here,
it
man.
Just ends up being the trial of Mark Furman, exactly. Essentially, is what ends up happening.
So I've always felt like my personal belief is like I feel like a lot of this shit sits at the feet of Judge Ito. Like Judge Ito just seemed almost, he's not incompetent, but he almost seemed like he was all up into the spotlight himself. You know?
He was, yeah. He was like the most famous judge. He's probably more famous than the Supreme Court judges at the time, you know?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure.
But more airtime, yeah.
He's the one that allowed the Furman tapes to be admissible.
And let them go to the premises of the house,
right.
Which apparently, like, the prosecution's like, this, what is this? This is not relevant. This isn't where the crime happened.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. I just feel like Judge Ito made it, like, for having cameras and allowing cameras in the courtroom.
Right.
That's kind of a big mistake. And then I feel like the Furman tape should have been inadmissible. I don't know what they had to do with this.
Yeah, because like it's fictional. It's it's partly fictional. You know,
it was 10 years prior.
Yeah.
Semi-fictional. Even if it isn't fictional, I mean, it's horrible to say, but it's not. It's not germane to the trial.
Right. It was like he was a consultant.
Go ahead, Greg.
He's a consultant.
Go ahead.
I mean, this is the dude. This is the same dude.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
All right.
This is the same dude that they found at, I know where OJ lives. Let's go to his house. And this is this dude that jumped over the gate.
Right,
come on,
right,
guys. Okay. He's supposed to be a cop. Yeah. Cops are crooked. You know what I mean? He jumps over the house, finds the glove. Look, it would be impossible for him to set this up, but he also went over the house first and saw OJ beating her up. And he
obviously, when was that? That was like
91 or something.
Yeah. And he said, It's your life.
He obviously hated OJ because he had this beautiful wife. Why can't I have a beautiful wife like this? I hate these Negroes with these white women. And I'm not saying he set him up, but this dude's a clear racist.
Yeah,
and he might not
have
set OJ up, but he might have set some other people up, which makes you not have confidence in the LAPD, which as a lawyer, hell yeah, you use.
Right.
Hell yeah, you use it. I think the tape should be in there. If this dude's saying nigger 3,000 times,
right.
I need to know this guy is a racist, and I need to know this racist is being allowed to be involved in everything.
Right, but he should not have taken the fifth when they asked him, did you plant evidence at the house? Just fucking answer that question.
Right.
Other stuff, like, yeah, you're incriminating yourself on perjury, he fucked the whole prosecution. Because they had no idea about those tapes. Had no idea,
and
they were pissed.
And the medical examiner guy,
Fung,
and it's like how
no glove,
yeah. How could so much shit go wrong? That's what I you know.
But always
true.
Use that latex, Paco.
I try.
Why is everybody like the blood? He was like, when was the last time you actually bought blood to the scene of the crime? He was like,
I guess it's the only time.
I'm like, all right, things are going wrong in this case, though. It's like things are obviously
those detectives.
Yeah.
That blanket from inside the house. The other thing, I'm like, I didn't know about that at all. Like, you don't just have a cop blanket in the car.
Yeah,
you just like, I just used a throw rug. It has some chihuahua hair on it.
On the couch or whatever. Like, I didn't know that.
It's gonna have DNA all over it.
Yeah. Yeah, that shit's crazy.
But it's also some deeper stuff. I mean, like, I love this stuff. I go deep into it. I know about Jason Simpson.
Yeah,
tell
us about that, because he's not in this barely at all.
He's not in this at all. And I think, you know, we need to talk about Jason. Like, Jason was on parole when this whole thing happened.
Wait, let's back up. Who is Jason?
Jason Simpson is O.J. Simpson's son from his
first
marriage.
From Marguerite.
What's her name?
Marguerite.
Marguerite. OJ and Marguerite had two kids, Jason and
three kids. One of them died.
Oh, that's right. One of them died in the swimming pool. Yeah. But OJ, Jason watched his sister die in that pool.
Fuck.
Jason watched it.
Oh,
there's a conspiracy online about him, right?
Yes.
You read about that stuff.
Yes.
Walk us through that, because it's been a while since I've read that.
Jason was working at a restaurant. He was trying to be a chef. And like maybe a couple of months before the murder happened, Jason got arrested for stabbing.
I'm actually have my hands in the air right now. What?
You didn't know about any of
that. Stabbing the chef that was trying to come at him because he had quit. He had missed one day of work.
Right.
And they said something like, you're fired. And he was like, well, if I'm fired, I want my pay for this day. And it was like, you missed that day. And he was like, fuck that. Went at him with a knife, went to court. Was on parole for that incident, and he was on like a certain drug that if he got off this drug, he would go crazy. He used to beat up his girlfriend, have psychotic episodes with his girlfriend. And when OJ and Nicole got divorced, Jason and Nicole were out partying, doing drugs together, drinking, hanging out.
Shut up.
So, what? I didn't know about that
and,
at all.
And Nicole was even told AC one time, somebody was stalking her. Somebody came to the apartment a while before, and she said it was either OJ or Jason.
Oh.
So a part of me thinks also OJ is trying to cover up Jason. They actually, it was a...
Oh, I've heard this theory.
Okay, go ahead.
It's a theory.
It's a theory.
Our little podcast did not crack.
It's good.
Well, we haven't heard it yet. Maybe we have. Go ahead.
Well, it's just, it's a lawyer, I think, from Texas in the late 90s, came out to L.A., and Jason's, I guess, like, what are those called? Those place where you store your furniture.
Storage locker.
Jason's storage locker had expired. So he bought his storage locker. He found a knife on the back of the thing. Looks like one of the marks that Nicole got in her head when he hit her on the back of the head.
Oh, right.
Jason was also taking like martial arts classes. So they found his car. They just found a lot of items.
Whoa.
They found a hat with the dog that had the same type of dog hair that was in the glove that they found. So they found a lot of stuff. But it's a conspiracy that I think, why didn't they interview Jason more? Why didn't they just go
there's no other suspects under investigation.
Just OJ.
Well, that's the same problem with Steve Avery, right? There was no other.
Why, though, would Jason kill Nicole? What was the motivation?
Well, he probably hated them. Probably hated her.
He cheated on his mom with Nicole.
Yep.
His mom. Marguerite's his mom.
And they didn't. They were supposed to.
He might have had some weird Oedipal shit with her or something too. Like this hot girl who's a lot younger.
He was in his 20s or something during this? Is that the big guy?
Yes.
That big shoulder?
Big light-skinned dude that looks like OJ. Yeah. But yeah, that's
so
him.
So that's his son?
That's his son.
That dude's
Jason.
Huge.
That's the guy that when AC and OJ roll up,
right.
Jason runs up first.
That's Jason.
And why does he run up first? Because he thinks his dad's going to kill himself for something that he did.
Oh, that is.
Oh my God. They did not. Ezra Edelman did not go down this rabbit hole. Why don't people talk about this?
I say because the case is done and they like the way it looks like this, and you know, I don't think people want to talk about that heavy part.
So he also has access to really sharp knives because he's a chef.
Chef, yes.
OJ supposedly
hates blood. OJ supposedly is like scared of blood. He doesn't like the sight of blood.
So do you think? Okay, let's. Okay, wow, this is crazy. So he could have contacted his dad if he had killed them both and said, "Help me out."
Exactly.
Yeah, because that's why he said when OJ says, "Well, if I did do it, it wasn't alone."
Yeah,
he says that.
Yeah.
So that's why his Bruno Mali shoes could have been in the... Wow. That's nuts.
But
he is also an abuser, just to go back to that. I mean, OJ Simpson is documented abusing her. Right.
He could have did it. I think OJ could have did it. I think Jason could have did it. I just think it's a lot of... The club that... not Nicole. What's the guy? Ron was working at. They had like a couple of murders in that club. Like it was a whole coke scene.
Oh, the Mezzaluna? Yeah. I was reading about that
people
today.
People getting murdered at that spot.
Another waiter who was friends with Ron was murdered shortly thereafter.
What?
And it was like, it looked like it was going to be a hold up, but it looked like actually like an assassination because they hit him in an ATM. They didn't take his money. They just shot him.
Yeah.
And they walked off.
And she used to date the owner of that restaurant, right? Wasn't that in part one or two, episode one or two, they talked to
the Mezzaluna?
The Mezzaluna. I think the guy that owned the restaurant.
By the way, Mezzaluna, two knives. That's what it means.
Oh.
In Italian.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I thought that was a review. I thought you were giving us a review.
Two knives out of five.
Oh, my God.
Like, why are Hollywood restaurants rated by number of knives?
Why is another person getting murdered like in 2 weeks of that?
So I didn't know about that.
It's a lot of
wow.
It's a lot bad of conspiracy metaphor.
Theories.
Yeah,
a lot
yeah,
of conspiracy no. theories within this.
Well, like there's a theory that she was, or like this theory that OJ puts forth is Nicole was doing coke and doing coke deals, and her and Ron were doing coke deals. Also, I don't know how involved Ron Goldman was in anything. It's like they were hanging out like maybe 6 weeks before this happened, and he never fully said that they were hooking up or anything. But they were like his friend. I think he just was returning glasses.
Me too.
That's
I think
it
was
like the
wrong
other
place, wrong time.
Ron, yeah, definitely wrong place, yeah.
Yeah. And which leads us to the Goldmans.
Yes.
Just horrifying having Fred to Goldman, sit through all that kind of stuff. But like, man, they are savages when it comes to going after OJ.
As they should be. Should be. If you think, you know, if that's what, they should.
Yeah, because they now own the rights to his confession novel or whatever.
Yeah.
His If I Did It, they are the ones that end up publishing that. I did not know that. That
I was didn't news either.
To me. And also it makes sense like why he had to go do things like that prank show and things like that.
Yeah.
Because he has to figure out how to make
I like how they shrank the word if.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
In the I did it part, which is very. And, you know, OJ's got, what, another 16 years or something?
He's coming up for parole in next year. 27.
Oh, he
is. This is not going to help.
Oh, I think it is.
Oh, you think it's going to help him?
Oh, yeah. Well, look, man, people control. You know how much money this made for people?
Yeah.
This doc?
Yes. This didn't just make money for Ezra. It made money for ESPN.
It made money for a lot of people.
Yeah. So if
Goldmans make money off this, you think?
I think so. Yeah, everybody's making money off
because they have the rights to his image and life now.
So why you got this gold? You got this golden pony just locked up in jail. Let's make some money off this dude. I think he's going to get out. Wow. I know America. He's going
to
get out.
Do you think they'll ask for a confession first? Don't they usually do? Or you have to say, I'm sorry, right? Usually in parole hearings, you have to say like, okay, I'm sorry I did this, right?
Yeah, so he has to just apologize for holding a guy up and stealing his Babe Ruth cards, I guess.
Oh, right.
That's what he's actually in jail for right now.
Most cities that have a sports hero have a statue. Oh, or something. Fuck. There is no OJ Plaza. Even before the
there's murals in Petro Hill though.
There's murals, but like, you know, usually there's something because he was a hometown at Galileo High School and like that is. So what do we got?
$36,500,000
is what he probably spent on his legal team.
On his legal team.
So yeah.
Wow.
$37 million.
And then so that's why the civil suit I think was $33 million.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that might have been all he had, you know. Left.
Well, it was.
They demolished the house. Did you see that in the video? The Goldmans are just like, fuck this. We're just destroying this house.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
could have had evidence in it, too.
He got 33 years in jail for the heist that he did for the $33 million that he owed to the Goldmans.
I feel like that judge was taking a lot of liberties.
My favorite is her just sipping off that slurping.
Just having so much fun.
Yeah. Having a big old gulp.
Dude, being a judge in Las Vegas, I mean, come on. You see all kinds of shit come through. She's just like, all right, let's get to business here.
I love they. Like that heist that they attempt is like the most like slapstick.
There should have been like Benny Hill music behind it. Like yackety sax.
It's like Snatched or like Lock, Stock, Two Smoking Barrels type kind of farcical.
They need a You're Not Famous Anymore pill. You know, that's an addiction, man.
Yes.
People want to be famous so bad, and when they're not famous, they just can't control it.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
They want to podcast.
they want to get, they'll bite people's faces. They want to get back in the press.
They'll do anything to get back in that wheelbarrow.
Yeah. That's like that child star problem, too. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's like a lot of that
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely. So I want to just kind of switch here. There's a couple things that I did not know, which is the term the N-word came from this trial. Did you guys know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, that's where this came from. Is
I'm trying to remember.
The N-word? The term N-word, really? N-word
came from.
Because everyone's covering it in the news. Yeah, media, and they're like, we can't say it now.
Yeah, so. And because it came up in trial so often where like Cochran wanted to use it.
Yeah,
and they were saying, you can't use it. But he's like, no, this is part of the fabric of what we're talking about.
Please.
So in order for the newscasters to talk about that strategy, they would use say the N-word.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's where that came from. All right. So I also want to now transition to Zoe Tour.
Oh, yes. The helicopter pilot.
Yeah.
Or helicopter journalist, like kind of a traffic journalist.
Yeah. Well, and she's trans, right? Yeah. So, mm-hmm. There's that also is this not the trans part, but the aspect of the media part of this.
Okay.
Yeah. And how much media played into the firestorm of the OJ trial.
Yeah. I mean, this is also like, I was thinking about this, like if it happened now, it would just be on Twitter and there'd just be on Twitter going like, kill yourself on Twitter. That's probably what it would have been. Like just the fact that there's only television at the time. Mm-hmm. It's the only way you get your instant news. And like every channel had this and it was an international story. And I remember watching it because it was like in the afternoon, right? The sun was still out. I'm like, why am I watching this? I'm fascinated by this. And I don't even know why.
Yeah.
because it is like, oh, am I going to see a guy kill himself? Is that what? Oh, like, why do I have that bloodlust?
Yeah.
Bloodlust.
Why are you Bugs Bunny all of a sudden?
But yeah, no, like, I mean, yeah, why is murder so entertaining to us?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's part.
We love it.
It's because we're the Americans. I mean, think about how this country was founded.
Talk
I mean,
about
like
it.
So much violence on the backs of slavery and conquest of having to kill the Native Americans and the Wild West.
Buffaloes.
Buffaloes. I was even reading yesterday that about Yankee Doodle Dandy, about the song, which was a British song that they made up to make fun of the Americans and the fact that we were just like kind of savages. Like the early Americans didn't dress nicely. Mm-mm. They smelled.
Yeah.
They ate all kinds of weird shit. And a macaroni was a term for a dandy back then. And so we just thought putting a feather in our cap made us look cool, basically. Yeah. And that's why they said, you know, call it a macaroni.
So we reclaimed the song as our own to kind of like make
so
it.
So, Americans have been into this viciousness since day one.
Savagery.
Yeah, they like rebelled against the British. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I just, and like the media part of it today. So I was watching this replay of the NBA Finals. Fuck Cleveland, by the way. And hate LeBron so much. And Warriors for life.
I love him. I'm so happy for LeBron. I'm so happy. He got it off his back.
Yeah,
hopefully he can do whatever he wants now.
Dude, I hate him so much. I respect the hell out of him. But
I hear you.
I hate him so much.
He really showed his cut. I didn't like the Draymond thing. Like, you know, Draymond took it too far. I was like, LeBron, stop. Stop. You're really sounding real soft right now.
Yeah.
Just go at them.
Yeah.
Don't say it like that.
Exactly. But
they're getting paid, though, man. I want to be an NBA basketball. I just want to be an NBA player so bad right now.
Yeah.
Get $88 million for just sitting on the bench.
They just the Mavs just offered Harrison Barnes $95 million. That's insane.
And he's staking up in the finals.
I could have played better. I've got a better shot than he does 95? Right now.
95.
That's insane. Like the amount of money the NBA is throwing around. Well, think about. I mean, just this is off topic, but just think about football players.
Yeah, it's not off topic. It's right on.
That's, I mean, okay.
The way people get paid in the sports.
It's the same made in America mentality.
Okay,
like,
good
if
point.
You look at these NBA owners and look at these NFL owners as slave owners.
Right.
I hate to say slave owners because a lot of people just making $30,000 a year and these dudes are making big money. But these guys have, like, NFL players are dying out there. These mm-hmm. dudes.
Oh, because of head injuries.
Head injuries, your legs, you can't walk, and you know, you go crazy. And they're not getting, they don't have guaranteed contracts. You get hurt, you're done, you're gone. You know, nobody cares. And these NBA players, man, they just have a better players association. But I think it's it's all connected, though. It's the same mentality of like, I own these guys. They're gonna do what I want you to do. And these guys can't even get money for themselves. You know what I mean? NFL, they hold them under their heel, man.
And they get like $12 million contracts.
Yeah.
And after 25, you're pretty much done in the NFL.
Well, that's like, it's really smart about OJ, like the calculating is, and like he just knew even in college, he's like, I got to have an exit strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, I know one day I'm not going to be able to
do this
stuff
anymore. And that's before the power agents.
Exactly.
That's decades before the power agents.
What's up with OJ's agent?
Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
Well, he obviously doesn't like him anymore. Like
from the
documentary.
I can't remember him.
He's the guy, Mike something. He had like the bracelets on. He was the one who was talking about. He actually is the one that brought up in episode 5 about all the shit he was doing in Orlando and just being like.
Yeah,
what?
Mike Gilbert. That's
Mike Gilbert.
Name, yeah. And he's the guy who ended up with the Heisman too, I think.
Oh, right. Really?
Yeah, I think. Well, then when they were putting all of OJ's stuff in storage to keep the Goldmans from getting it, he grabbed a bunch of stuff, threw it in storage units. There were some storage units in South San Francisco.
Two separate people. Okay.
There was a bunch of, I think a bunch of family people were doing that also. Just so he was still loyal to him throughout that whole period.
Mm.
And it's just like after he's just like, well, he was loyal up to being in this documentary, it seems like almost.
Well, I think one of the things that for me that made this documentary so compelling is every time I think, oh, he's putting up like kind of racist white guys. So they're saying like, oh, he got like stonewalled. And then all of a sudden they would show more from OJ and be like, oh, no, now he's showing that OJ is kind of like vicious and mean, and he could do this. And then he's like, oh, well, no, no. You know?
Like Ron Shipp, his friend who's a cop.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of people that are kind of like back and forth the whole time. Yeah. Like,
well, I mean, if it's like, I don't know. For me, there was a moment where I'm like, well, his friends think he did it. The prosecution thinks he did it. OJ kind of thinks he did it. The jury thought he did it, but didn't want to convict him because of Rodney King and shit like that. It's almost like everyone thinks he did it, except he got off. It's pretty – I think there's a moment where OJ says, if the jury convicts me, then I guess I did it. Yeah. He even uses that
line. Well, the prosecution was also bad.
Oh, they're horrible.
You know, they're bad.
Yeah.
They got beat, you know? Yeah. They just got beat.
After like 9 months or whatever, this crazy trial.
Greg, let me ask you. Do you think the jurors – did you think they just didn't care or didn't get it or cared and got it? Like, what's your thought on the jurors?
I think, it was a 2-year trial, right? Yeah. I think the jurors were tired. Yeah. I think people got mad at the jurors for just taking like 3 hours or 6 hours to debate. But I think they knew 5 months before, you know, what they were going to. I think they were tired. I think a lot of them have been living in L.A. and just been seeing the cops and just racism, the Watts riot. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't do this to a group of people for so long and let us have the opportunity to vote somebody out that no, they don't even care if he did it. It was like, we don't care if he did it. I don't think they cared if he did it or not.
Yeah.
I think it was just like, we need a victory. And
after
this Rodney King shit was horrible.
Yeah.
It was on videotape. We watched this over and over again. It was and just watching that over and over again does something to people too. Like just seeing that and then they got off.
Yeah.
So let OJ off. Yeah.
It's been so long since I've seen that footage and it's so fucking
brutal. And that was on every day.
It was on a lot.
Multiple times a day as a kid watching that. Yeah. It's
And like it's 20 years later.
Yeah.
And we're still so
Racist. It's worse. Well, we got a black president now.
He didn't get shot.
Yeah.
He was just beat. Like
we got a black president now. Yeah. So like they, you know, the people, the white supremacists in this world that feel like that, they feel like they're really losing the country. So those bats are coming out. Those guns are coming out. People are angry. People are mad.
And it's
this
against
Bush shit right now. Yeah. This Brexit shit. You know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all outdoors.
And I don't think LAPD's gotten any better.
Not at all. I've been stopped by the LAPD.
I've had
a gun pulled on me by the LAPD in my backyard.
What?
Yes. So I don't think it's getting better at all. And I'm Greg. I'm the same Greg. I wasn't aggressive.
Right.
I was driving. I'm driving. I have my license plate, the registration, the tag. It was a month overdue, but I had the sticker. You know, I had the sticker and everything. And I guess he could see the sticker. And I'm pulling around. I'm going through my drive. I'm driving down my street. There's a cop behind me, but the lights aren't on. Mm. And I'm like, all right. So I pull in. I pull into my driveway, and the lights still aren't on. But I do see a cop. I see a cop's car in my and I live like an apartment building like this, where you have to drive down a lane and you move in. And
they follow you down that.
They follow me down there. And I get out of my car and guns are drawn on me as soon as I get out of the car. As soon as I'm out of the car, guns are drawn on me. And I'm like, don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me. Please don't shoot me. And then they start talking to me. You know what I mean?
Wait, they come out guns drawn.
Guns drawn as soon as I...
private driveway.
No lights.
Over a tag.
Over a tag. And that was the thing. Man, the thing was over a tag, and it was like, you were speeding a little bit, and you don't have the right tag. And I'm like, the thing, it's right there. You can see it. Have you been drinking? How many beers have you had on me? How many beers have you had on you tonight? I've had one beer, sir. I've had one beer. We're going to do a breathalyzer. We're going to take you down. Then he brought three other cops.
What?
We're going to take you down to do a breathalyzer. I'm in like the jail in I guess it's like West Hollywood.
Oh, so they did take you.
Oh, they took me in.
Oh, my God.
They make me do the breathalyzer at the jail. I blow a 0.00.
Yeah. Wow.
And then I'm like, am I free to go? And he was like, yeah, you're free to go. He was like, can I talk to you for a second? I'm like, no, man, get the fuck out of my face. Look what you've done. You ruined my night. My girlfriend's scared shitless.
Right.
I got to go home. My girl's like, you should write a report. You should write a report. I'm like, what the fuck is that going to do?
Yeah,
what the
nothing.
Fuck is that going to
do? Maybe hire Carl Douglas.
Yeah, exactly.
That's scary.
It's still the same situation, man. You know, I could die leaving this place right now.
Yeah.
But most everybody can die leaving going outside now. That's the world we live in.
Yeah,
it's a crazy world we live in right now.
Like, I would have said a few years ago that at least SFPD is not LAPD, but SFPD has been doing this worse, just as bad shit.
SFPD.
It's globally. You know, it's not just in the States. It's happening in the UK. It's happening in South Africa. It's the same shit everywhere.
When you, like, militarize any group of people, after a few generations, they're going to think they're gods.
Yep.
And they're going to take it off, you know, out on people's heads and shit.
One thing I didn't really remember the details of, and only vaguely, and I didn't realize how big a role it played in the riots, was when the Korean grocery owner, Sung Ja-do, shoots that girl in the, in the back.
Yeah.
Like, that's, watching that footage is super disturbing. That's also in there. There's no like trigger warning about that in there, because there's like, there's also, by the way, it's, if you haven't seen it, it's super gory. Episode 4, you're seeing like all the actual just like footage.
Never seen those pictures.
Of course. Like, when would they publicly do that?
Oh, when they shot the girl? When that picture?
There was that, but then also it was like saying like the Nicole and Ron stuff.
Oh, yeah.
See,
yeah,
that's really gory. But like the video of that girl being shot, and the fact that that woman did no jail time.
Yes, yeah,
she didn't know jail time. She got public service. She got community service
for shooting somebody.
She got voluntary manslaughter, but the judge didn't give her jail time.
Yeah,
she could have got jail time. The judge didn't give her jail time.
Just let you know, like, this group, this one group of people are getting all this backlash, and the same group of people that have been getting this backlash since the country was invented. Mm-hmm. You know, Watts, mm-hmm. LA riots. Of course, these people are going to vote anybody out. You know, that has the money, that's been a hero. Yeah, let's vote them out, because they don't care about us anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it goes into institutionalized racism as well, which is a topic for another long discussion.
This isn't the appropriate time to do that?
I mean, it is an hour into this?
Is that not?
But that's the beauty of this, that it shows all of that. And
it does.
And it shows that we're addicted to it. And it's the drug. We're on a drug and we're taking a drug. It's all of it. Yeah. And we're watching the drug happen.
Well, it reminded me last night, I was talking to my roommate about this, and we brought up the Stanford guy who
Brock Turner.
Yeah, who got basically nothing for his 20 minutes of action, as his dad said.
Yeah, right.
Like, it still hasn't, nothing's really changed. I mean, it's the same stuff. He's from, you know, he goes to a very good, very rich school and does what he did and gets basically nothing.
And look at the picture they used of him. They used a picture of him like this. Yeah. But the picture of him when he raped her, his hair's all wild. Shot, his eyes are just bulged out.
Yeah, it's
same shit.
It is the same shit.
If you got money and you're white, you're good to go.
Yeah.
You're good.
Basically, or black if you got money, you know.
If you got a lot of money.
You
got
to have a lot more money.
You got to have a lot of money. And you got to have been a certain way of black for 30 years.
Yeah.
You know, you can't, Malcolm X isn't getting that same, you know.
No,
Fred Hampton isn't getting that same legal defense. You know what I mean?
That is true.
You're going to jail, or we're going to just kill you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to do a nice little wrap up and an arc on this, I mean, there's so much, but I just what is your take from this doc? You obviously like it a lot.
I love this doc. I hope people just see past the documentary and see what's really, you know, like the sickness that's really in America, the racism, the depth of racism, the white supremacists, the sickness that we have in this country, and this hate that we have against everybody. I mean, this hate that we have against Judge Ito, the hate that we have for women, the hate that we have for black people, the hate that we have for poor people, the love and hate that we have for rich people and celebrity and fame. It's just, we're a sick, sick group of people, and we need to get off of this drug that we're on. And I hope that's what people see in this documentary.
Yeah. Well, well said, sir. Thank you so much, Greg, for meeting with
us. Thanks for having me. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. You can find episodes of SupDoc on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Please review, subscribe, and rate.
And you can follow us on Twitter at SupDocPodcast and online at SupDocPodcast.com.
This show is produced by Will Scovel, and our theme music is by David Siegel.
If you want to suggest a documentary or a future guest, please email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.